In 1932, a young German pastor named Dietrich Bonhoeffer stood before Berlin's elite congregation and delivered a warning that would echo across history. The German church, he declared, had drifted so far from authentic faith that God would judge them unless they repented. 11 years later, Allied bombs reduced that same church to rubble, a haunting fulfillment of prophecy. Today, this story carries urgent relevance. The parallels between 1930s Germany and contemporary America aren't about equating specific regimes, but about recognizing a pattern. What happens when the church mistakes silence for spirituality? When it confuses cultural retreat with godliness? When it prioritizes respectability over righteousness? The German church possessed something we lack, the excuse of ignorance. They couldn't foresee where their small compromises would lead. We have no such luxury. History has handed us a roadmap of catastrophic failure, making our potential repetition of their mistakes inexcusable. America's exceptionalism stems not from inherent superiority, but from a unique historical relationship between faith and freedom. As Alexis de Tocqueville observes, American churches championed religious liberty rather than opposing it, a radical departure from European patterns. This created a nation where gospel values could shape public life, making America a beacon of freedom globally. Yet today's church increasingly retreats into what it mistakenly considers a properly religious sphere, apologizing for being too political in previous decades. This retreat betrays a fundamental misunderstanding. Religious liberty in America never meant privatized belief. It guaranteed free exercise of faith everywhere. When William Wilberforce fought slavery, critics told him to keep his religious views private. He refused, recognizing that God called him to public action. Similarly, Bonhoeffer rejected demands to avoid being political about Nazi persecution of Jews. The forces we face today, critical race theory, radical gender ideology, abortion advocacy, are fundamentally anti-God and anti-human, attacking family, marriage, and human dignity while masquerading as champions of justice. They've silenced opposition by convincing Christians that fighting them means abandoning the gospel for politics, a deception designed to neutralize truth speakers. There is no neutral ground. Silence itself is a choice with consequences. German sociologist Elisabeth Noel Neumann, who lived through the Nazi era, spent her post-war career studying why so few who privately opposed Hitler spoke out until after the war. Her research revealed the spiral of silence, a psychological pattern where perceived social isolation drives public silence even when private opposition exists. People instinctively monitor their environment for signs of popular opinion. When they perceive their views as minority positions, they become less willing to express them, creating a self-reinforcing cycle where dissent becomes increasingly costly. Of Germany's 18,000 Protestant pastors, only 3,000 firmly opposed Hitler's Reichschurch. Another 3,000 aligned with the Nazis. Most troubling were the 12,000 who remained neutral. Had even a few thousand more stood with the confessing church, the Nazis could never have succeeded, an extraordinary and heartbreaking realization. Conversely, speaking out creates a counter spiral of courage. When Rosa Parks refused to give up her bus seat, she created space for others to follow. Courage begets courage, just as cowardice begets cowardice. After disobeying God, Adam and Eve immediately recognized their nakedness and hastily wove fig leaves into loincloths, a pathetic attempt to fix their spiritual problem through their own efforts. This archetypal image captures our human tendency toward works righteousness, yet the American church has fallen into the opposite error, cheapening belief to mere intellectual assent. We point to statements of faith or creeds as proof of our belief, but these become fig leaves if our actions don't align with our professed beliefs. Martin Luther rediscovered the liberating truth that we're justified by faith, not works. In his enthusiasm, he initially dismissed the Epistle of James because it seemed contradictory, but James provides crucial balance. What good is it if someone says he has faith but does not have works? Can that faith save him? Even demons believe in God but aren't saved. Abraham's faith was completed by his works. Faith without works is dead. When we claim to believe something we don't truly believe, we're repeating Adam and Eve's fig leaf deception. God isn't fooled. He sees our hearts and knows what we truly believe by how we live. True faith demands complete engagement of our whole selves, less about what we intellectually believe than in whom we trust. The American church has made evangelism an idol, creating a theological imbalance that paralyzes action. The reasoning seems compelling. If eternity is at stake, nothing compares with leading someone to salvation. But God calls us to many simultaneous duties. Throughout Scripture, God's people build walls, fight battles, and speak hard truths that drive people away. When Jesus spoke about eating his body and drinking his blood, many followers abandoned him. This wasn't a miscalculation. Sometimes, truth-telling drives people away. Many pastors refuse to address controversial issues, fearing it might interfere with salvation opportunities. But eventually, we must say something that causes people to stop nodding along. Jesus called religious leaders whitewashed tombs and children of their father the devil, hardly the approach of someone afraid of offending potential converts. We've reduced the gospel to getting someone to pray a salvation prayer, neglecting justice, opposing evils, or engaging with government. When Pilate asked, "What is truth?" he unknowingly addressed the one who was truth itself. We cannot separate truth from love without degrading both. There are two ways to err: speaking truth with so little love that it ceases to be truth, or showing so much love that you forsake truth entirely. In June 1987, President Reagan stood at the Brandenburg Gate and delivered words establishment figures had urged him to cut. "Mr. Gorbachev, tear down this wall." Those words carried spiritual power that created the first crack in what many thought an unbreakable edifice. Reagan, like Bonhoeffer, answered to a higher authority, thinking of Christians suffering in Soviet gulags and refusing to accept evil as unchangeable. When crisis demands action, we must answer. Who do we say God is, and what price are we willing to pay to do right? Jesus's parable of the talents reveals God's view of our safe religious excuses for inaction. The master praises risk-takers, but condemns the fearful servant who buried his talent. There is no safe middle path. Either we trust God as loving and gracious, or we view him as a hard master and condemn ourselves. Today, we face cultural Marxism, systemic racism claims, and transgender ideology contradicting biblical truth. Will we push against these false barriers or hang back to see which way the wind blows? God calls each of us to specific action: running for office, homeschooling children, speaking truth when others are silent. This is our moment. We were born for this. If a holy remnant acts, we'll see God's hand move. Stand, speak, act. Because silence in the face of evil is itself evil, and history will judge not just what we said, but what we failed to say when it mattered most.